right, so last week we started a new sermon series where we were talking about blessing our community. And one of the very first things we covered, a very important fact that many of you probably already know, your pastor's a big nerd. And I'm really into the superhero scene, superhero movies and TV shows. In fact, I've been watching superhero TV shows since I was a little kid. I remember watching the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Maybe you can call them superheroes or not, whatever. But I remember watching that show when I was a little kid. And then as I got older, Batman the Animated Series came out. And that one was like a little kid's dream come true, seeing Batman fight all of these characters. And so I've been watching these shows, and there's been something great about all of them. But as I grew up, when I was a young adult, a new type of show came out. This was a live-action Superman TV show. And it wasn't like all these other cartoons. Because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Batman, it focused on, you know, the adventures of that hero after they are a hero. But this one aired on, well, to show my age, it aired on what was the WB and now is called the CW. It was a show called Smallville. And Smallville, it followed Superman, but he wasn't Superman yet. It more followed Clark Kent as he became Superman in his high school years. And it showed him getting his powers. It kind of happened kind of like, we go through puberty and our bodies go through changes. And the same thing happened to him, except he had a lot more severe changes. Like, I don't know, in one episode he started getting the hots for one girl and suddenly had heat vision. And he had to learn how to control that and not burn people alive. And there was another episode where he began to develop his X-ray vision. And he had to learn how to control it, and it got stuck for a while, and he was just walking around viewing everybody in their skeletons. And it's interesting. I mean, some of these superpowers, they're interesting if you really stop and think about them. Because I'm sure X-ray vision and heat vision, they're useful in fighting crime. But being able to see through walls, being able to see beyond what normal people can see, that has the potential to give you a whole new perspective on the world, to see the world through different lenses. I remember when the movie Daredevil came out and the subsequent TV shows and whatever. But Daredevil, if you're not familiar with who Daredevil is, he's a man by the name of Matt Murdock. And he's a lawyer by day. He's also a devout Catholic. And then he dresses up like a devil at night and goes around beating people up in New York City streets for vengeance and justice. You can work out his Catholicism with that on your own. But he does all of this despite the fact that he's blind. Because of his blindness, due to, you know, some radioactive waste, there's always something radioactive involved. But he developed extra senses, like his sense of hearing and smell and touch. It's heightened beyond that of a normal person. So much so that he doesn't even have to see, but he could hear the heartbeat of a man a block away. He could smell what he had for lunch, and he could, you know, smell cologne and whatever. And he could tell a whole bunch of things about this man that he can't even see. He has a whole new perspective on this world. He sees the world differently. And while, yes, he has martial arts skills and stuff like that, and that helps him to fight crime, really his superpower is he sees the world differently. And this is kind of the point that Jesus directs us to in the parable of the Good Samaritan. We were looking at that parable last week. And we looked at the question, the challenge that this lawyer, this Pharisee, the teacher of the law, brought to Jesus when he asked, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And they discussed it, and it came to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And the guy pushed back on that second one, asking, "Who is my neighbor?" And that's where we get this parable. And in conclusion, we got to that last week. At the end of the parable, Jesus gives the command, gives the direction, go and do likewise. That was where we left things last week. Go and do likewise. But if we're honest, that's easier said than done. Because so many times, like, we know what we're supposed to do. We know that we're supposed to help our neighbors. We're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves. We get that, and we want to do that. But so many times we find it hard because we don't know. We don't know what's going on in people's lives. We don't know the hurt and the pain that are present in someone else's life. And so how can we help them if we can't see the need? And this is where Jesus goes in the parable. If you have your Bibles, we'll be in Luke chapter 10, same as we were last week, starting in verse 30. Jesus says, "A man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He encountered thieves who stripped him naked, beat him up, and left him near death." Now this kind of sets the scene for us. It paints a picture of where we're at. And, I don't know, being a nerd, it helps to picture it in the comic book. I mean, if you were reading a comic book and this scene were to be painted, I mean, it would start out just a guy. Maybe he's leaving work. He had to stay a little late because, you know, reasons, and everyone else left before that. And so he's venturing out in the parking lot and walking down the abandoned streets all by himself. And of course, it's a comic book, and so it's probably like rainy and stuff. Everything happens at night when it's rainy. And so he pulls his coat up around him, and he walks down these dark alleys. And as he's walking, he hears something behind him. It sounds like footsteps. So he stops and he turns around, but there's nobody there. This gets his anxiety up, and he starts walking a little bit faster, worried that there might actually be a problem. And so as he's hurrying down the road, almost in a run, somebody jumps out in front of him, a guy with an evil grin, and he just knows that something is about to happen. And so he turns to run the other direction, but there's another behind him, and he's trapped. He can't go anywhere. And that's when the comic book would fade to black, and we wouldn't really see what happens, but Jesus tells us exactly what happens. This man is robbed and beaten. I was listening to the 10-Minute Bible Hour podcast a few weeks ago, and the host, Matt Whitman, was telling a story about a trip that he and his family took. They went to another country, and it was a bigger city, a touristy thing. And he was saying that they were riding on public transport. I think it was a train. And as they were sitting there on the train, he said there was a couple of people who started arguing. He said he found it weird because like 10 minutes before they were talking as if they knew each other, but now they were arguing as if they were complete strangers, and it was kind of distracting. And it was around that time that the train stopped, and you know, everyone started trying to push their way out. And as everyone was trying to push their way out, he said his wife and his son were there, and this man trying to push his way out the door started trying to push his way between his wife and son. And, you know, her maternal instincts kicked in. She didn't want to be separated from her child in some foreign city and lose her son. And so she did everything that she could to fight against that and to keep her son with her. And after all of the mess and everything going on, they finally got out of that train. And they quickly realized that her cell phone and her credit cards were all gone. It was all a ruse. It was all a distraction to keep them distracted so that their stuff could be taken. And they called the credit card companies and tried to, you know, clear everything up. And it was amazing how quickly they started trying to charge things. Within like an hour, they had hit 3 jewelry stores trying to buy large cost items. And fortunately, the credit card company was able to detect the fraud and take care of all that stuff. And they really weren't out a whole lot other than replacing a cell phone and trying to make it the rest of their time without their credit cards. But I'm sure many of you remember that there was a time when we weren't a cashless society. And if you wanted to spend money, you didn't just have a plastic card in your pocket. You had to actually carry cash. It was the point in our history where people would actually cash their paycheck. They maybe put some of it in the bank, but if they wanted to put gas in the car, if they wanted to buy anything, they had to have cash. And so it was not uncommon that people would carry hundreds of dollars in cash in case they needed it. This guy did not live in a cashless society. It wasn't I lost my wallet, but you know, I'm going to just call the bank and they will take care of everything. I mean, he was leaving Jerusalem, going to Jericho. There's a really good chance that he had at least a full day's wages on his person. And if he had any other profession, maybe he was a merchant or something, it's likely he had more than that. Thousands of dollars. No bank to back him up to say, well, we'll take care of it, we'll absorb the loss for you. He was just out thousands of dollars. And then there's the fact that they took his clothes. They didn't just stop it at stealing his wallet and stealing his money. They stripped him naked and took his clothes. Now, you and I mean, that seems like that's silly. Why would you take somebody's clothes? I mean, I could probably go and get a whole outfit for about $20 maybe if I'm thrifty enough. But in this time, before manufactured clothing, I mean, if you were going to have an outfit, if you're going to have clothes, they were hand woven. They were hand sewn. And so an article of clothing, it was expensive to the point that most people had one or two pieces of clothing. And they would wash them at night and hang them to dry so that then they could wear them again the next day. This man lost thousands of dollars in a very expensive outfit. But also he was beaten. And I think this one gets lost on us today because we see TV shows, we see movies, and people get beat up in these things all the time. It seems like the thing that happens, the hero wants to disable some bad guy and not kill him, so he does that great one-hit punch and it knocks the guy out. Or he comes up behind him and karate chops him and, you know, the guy just crumples and he can take him away, he can do whatever he needs to with him. But that's not reality. This guy was to be classified as half dead or near death. I mean, he was at least unconscious. And in order to knock somebody out, in order to make them unconscious, it would take a severe beating to get to that point. Likely, this man was stabbed repeatedly. He was beaten to the point where he probably had broken ribs and other broken bones and left in a naked pile on the side of the road. He probably looked as if he was dead. And even though he wasn't, without proper medical attention, he would be soon. So this is the scene that's set. This man is in a dire position where he needs help. And that's when Jesus continues on. He says, now it just so happened that a priest was also going down the same road. When he saw the injured man, he crossed over to the other side of the road and went on his way. Now I'm sure as the crowd is hearing this for the first time, they hear the scene that's set, the dire position that this guy is in, and they hear it just so happened that a priest was walking down the road. I'm sure that their first thought was, oh, thank God, somebody who can help. Because that's who the priest would have been. The priest was a very well-respected person. He would have known the law. He would have known the things that Jesus had been talking about, love your neighbor as yourself. He would have been well-equipped to help this person, to take care of him. He would have had the resources to do what was necessary to get this guy the help that he needed. Yet this priest crosses by on the other side of the street. If we go back to our comic book scene, I mean, Who would you expect? Somebody who would come on the scene that's in a good position to help this man who's been beaten. I mean, a nurse? A doctor? Maybe somebody, they just got off their shift and they're coming down the street and they come across this man and they are perfectly positioned to be able to help. They've taken the Hippocratic oath and, you know, they are the ones where you would see, oh, this person's coming down the street. This doctor is coming along. Thank God he's saved. But that doctor, as he sees the man on the ground, he steps over him, crosses by to the other side of the street and goes down the other sidewalk and just keeps going on his way. And I'm sure that we could come up with all the justifications. You know, well, I'm sure the doctor was really worried about a malpractice suit. You know, if he started trying to help this guy, I mean, we live in America and people are sue happy, and I'm sure he's going to get sued for this, that, or whatever if he tries to help. Or maybe he just got done with a hard day's work, just got done at the hospital, and, you know, if he calls in and tries to get some help, he's going to be detained, he's going to be asked questions. In fact, there's a chance that maybe they're going to think that he did it and is trying to cover his tracks, and it's just going to cause a whole lot of problems for him. We don't know the justification of this priest, but shortly after the priest steps aside and walks on by, Jesus says, likewise, a Levite came by that spot, saw the injured man, and crossed over to the other side of the road and went on his way. Now, a Levite, they were a little bit lower than the priests. They weren't to the same level, the same prestige as a priest, but they were still in that same category. The Levite would have known the law. The Levite may not have had all the resources of the priest, but the Levite could have done something about this. And so in our comic book scene, after the doctor goes by and doesn't help, I don't know, another police officer, a firefighter, a first responder, somebody else who is fully capable of helping and who should help comes along the scene, but once again, they go by on the other side of the road and continue on their way. I mean, he would have known the law. He would have known to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the problem with this priest and Levite. They should have known better. They did know better. And yet, they didn't stop and help. And that's a story of so many people who've been hurt by the church. People who should have known better. Now, we know we live in a fallen world. People are going to hurt you. I'm sorry, that's just reality. We fully accept that and embrace that robbers are going to steal from you and liars are going to lie to you. That's just the way this world works. But when it's people in the church, when it's people who should know better, it just hurts that extra bit. Because they're the ones who are telling the world, we need to love and we need to help. And this is what God says and this is how we get close to God. And so they should know better. And so when they don't help, when they are the ones who are hurting people, it stings that extra bit. As a pastor, I can't go too long without hearing stories of people who have been hurt by the church. Maybe it was a pastor or a priest. Maybe it was some church leader. Maybe it was just some average Joe in the church. But they do something. They say something. They don't do something. And they hurt someone. And those people, they don't look at the church the same again. If that's you, if you are that person who has been hurt, who that church person has done something or didn't do something when they should have known better, on behalf of the church, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that they did that. No excuses. They should not have done that. That is not what Jesus teaches. That is not how he has called us to act. And I'm sorry. It hurts when people who should know better don't do what's right. But this is where we come to the namesake of this parable. In verse 33, Jesus says, "A Samaritan who was on a journey came to where the man was. But when he saw him, he was moved with compassion. The Samaritan went to him and bandaged his wounds, tending them with oil and wine. Then he placed the wounded man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took 2 full days' worth of wages and gave them to the innkeeper. He said, 'Take care of him, and when I return, I will pay you back for any additional costs.'" Now, I'm going to point out what I did last week. This is a fictional story. This didn't really happen. Jesus is making it up, and he could rearrange and he could make it say whatever he wanted in order to make the point that he is trying to make. And so Jesus could have made the person injured the Samaritan and made the hero a Jew. Jesus was well aware of the racial tensions that we spoke of last week. He knew all about it, and in spite of that, knowing all of that, Jesus chose to poke the bear. Jesus chose to pour fuel on this fire and make the Samaritan, the despised person, the hero. If we go back to our comic book scene, as this man is lying there bleeding and broken, the most unlikely hero starts walking down the street. Who would that be? In your own mind, if you're picturing this comic book and somebody starts walking down the street and this is a person, you're like, there is no way that person's going to stop and help. In fact, they're probably going to like try and see if there's anything left to take. They're going to take advantage of this person. At the very least, they're definitely not going to help. Who is that person in your mind? The most unlikely of hero. Maybe it's some backwoods redneck hillbilly. Maybe it's some, you know, young thug with his pants, you know, halfway down his legs. And maybe it's some homeless person with like 3 coats that he's found and hair all over and he smells bad. And you're like, there is no way that person's going to be the hero. There is no way that person is going to stop and help. Yet that's exactly what happened. That's who came walking down the street. And Jesus said, when he saw the man, he was moved with compassion. The literal translation says that he was moved in his bowels. That doesn't quite work in our translation these days. At that point, they understood the bowels as being the core of our emotions. And so it would be, you know, his heart was moved. His heart connected with this person. He saw this man broken, having lost everything. And his heart went out to him. He had compassion on him. You see, there was a stark difference between how the Levite and the priest saw this man and how this Samaritan, this unlikely hero, saw the same thing. He saw the same scene, yet he saw it differently. He used his, I don't know if he was Superman, his X-ray vision. He used his compassionate eyes, and he saw the world differently. He saw this man differently. He didn't see just another victim. He saw a kindred spirit, and his heart went out to him. Jesus commended this Samaritan for his compassionate eyes, and he said, "Go and do likewise." Just as this Samaritan did, just as this Samaritan saw, go and do likewise. But as we said at the beginning, that's easier said than done. Because so many times we don't know of the problems. And if we don't know of the problems, then we can't help. We don't see the need. The truth is, there are problems all around us. I mean, you don't have to go very far. It could be just the person sitting right next to you. The people that you interact with on a daily basis, there are problems all around us if we just have the eyes to see them. And if we're going to see these problems, if we're going to have compassionate eyes, that's what it takes in order to have compassion, in order to help people. So how do we get to that point? How do we become like this Samaritan who had compassionate eyes, who was able to see the problem and therefore do something about it? Well, there are a few steps that we need to take in order to develop our compassionate eyes. And the very first one is we need to take off our judgmental glasses. This one's kind of hard because we don't even realize that we're doing it. We don't realize that we have them on. I wear glasses on a daily basis. I was just having a conversation about it this morning. I wake up in the morning and I put my glasses on and I don't even think about them. They're just there on my face. And everything that I see is filtered through the lenses of these glasses. And I don't even realize it until I come to the end of the day and I take them back off and I don't think about how they impact how I see the world. It becomes just second nature. And the same is true with our judgmental glasses. We don't even realize that we have them on. As we look at the problems that other people are facing, it usually comes across as, well, I'm just stating the facts. I'm just calling it like it is. This is the way things are. It usually comes out because it's really easy to judge. It comes out by saying, well, they shouldn't have done that. Or they just need to do this. Take the scenario of an old guy. He's up there in years. He can't really take care of his house anymore. And there are things that need to be done. And he has older kids, but he burned those bridges a long time ago. And it'd be really easy for us to look with judgmental eyes and say, well, he shouldn't have alienated his kids. He would have all the help that he needs to fix up the house if he just hadn't alienated his kids. Or, what he needs to do is just swallow his pride and go talk to the kids and make up, and then he'd have all the help that he needs. That's what needs to happen. And we look at it through our judgmental glasses. We almost look at it as if they've made their bed and now they need to lie in it. They, because of their actions or because of their inactions, they deserve this. Why should I help? I didn't create the problem. I can't help but think that this was the mindset of the priest and the Levite. They saw this man lying on the side of the road, and I'm sure that thoughts went through their head. Oh man, the guy should have known better. That was a terrible time to be traveling. You shouldn't do that. If you're going to travel, you need to go with a group. It's going to protect you more. I feel bad for him, but that's kind of what you get. And we look at people through our judgmental glasses. It's kind of like Superman trying to use his X-ray vision while wearing lead spectacles. It completely blinds him. There is no way that he can use his X-ray vision with those lead spectacles. And we do the same thing with our judgmental glasses. There is no way that we can view the world with compassionate eyes if we're wearing judgmental glasses. It filters everything that we see, and all the compassion is filtered out through judgment. The second thing we need to do, if we're going to develop these compassionate eyes, well, then we need to remember that you're a servant and not a judge. And I know the immediate Christian response is, Jesus doesn't say not to judge. In fact, he gives us clear instruction that we are to not judge hypocritically. It's okay for me to point out the speck in my brother's eye if I get the plank out of mine first. And it's absolutely true. We are called to direct people to God's holy standard. And it's not wrong to judge. I agree. But that's not what I'm saying. This isn't a reminder that you should never judge. This is a reminder that you're not the judge of who deserves compassion and who doesn't. Because so many times, especially with our judgmental glasses on, we look at them and say, they don't deserve to be bailed out. They have dug this hole for years. This is the consequences. And if I bail them out, if I take care of them, well, then they're never going to learn. And we set ourselves up as the judge to say, they deserve it, they don't. I am the arbiter of what is good and what is right, and who is deserving of someone to look at them with compassion. But what if we're wrong? I mean, it's one thing if we're wrong and we're overly compassionate. That's one thing. But what if somebody is deserving of compassion? I mean, if you want to even classify it as deserving. And we judge wrong. We judge them as someone that we shouldn't help. And we don't even have all the information. We don't have the whole story. We're basing it off of our limited knowledge. Now, I understand we're called to be shrewd. We only have so many resources. We only have so much that we can do to help. I get that. We need to be wise about how we use our time and how we use our money and what we do to help other people. We need to be wise. I get that completely. And if somebody burns you, you help someone out and they don't use it properly, or you know, they just blow it, and it can put a sour taste in your mouth. And you don't want to help that person again, and that's understandable. Be wise about how you use your resources. But when we use that as an excuse to raise ourselves to the level of judge, and we take what this person did and we hold it over this person over here, to say, well, you don't deserve this. I shouldn't help you because, well, you did this to yourself. Because there's someone else who could help you because you did this, that, or whatever. What we've done is we've elevated ourselves to the level of judge. And that's not our role. Our role is not judge, to decide who is deserving of God's compassion and who is not. Our role is that of a servant. And finally, if we're going to develop compassionate eyes, the most simple thing to do is to apply the golden rule. We've all heard the golden rule. We've heard it said over and over again. It predates even the scriptures where we have it written down. It has been something that God has been telling us from the very beginning. And if you're not familiar with what the golden rule says, Jesus lays it out for us in Luke chapter 6. He says, treat people in the same way that you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, why should you be commended? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, why should you be commended? Even sinners do that. If you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, why should you be commended? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be paid back in full. Instead, love your enemies, do good, and lend expecting nothing in return. If you do, you will have a great reward. You will be acting the way children of the Most High act, for he is kind to ungrateful and wicked people. If you want to develop compassionate eyes, just start applying the golden rule. If the tables were turned, if the whole situation was reversed, how would you want someone to treat you? Would you want them to hold all of your mistakes over you? If you'd made a simple mistake, maybe you've made a whole bunch of mistakes and you have dug yourself into a hole for years and you just need help getting out of it. What would you want someone else to do? Would you want them to say, well, this is, you know, the consequences for what you've done. Sorry, I'd like to help, but you made your bed, now lie in it. Would you want someone to say, well, I helped somebody else, and so I can't help you? Would you want them to look at you with judgmental glasses, or would you want them to look at you with compassionate eyes? That was the Good Samaritan superpower. He was able to see the world differently. Because he had compassionate eyes, he saw the same thing that the priest and the Levite saw. But with his compassionate eyes, he was moved with compassion and he did something about it. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. This Samaritan saw a problem. And he was moved with compassion. He said, there's a problem here and I can help. Maybe it's not a big thing. And yeah, it's probably going to cost me some money and it's definitely going to cost me some time. But I can help. I can do something. I can meet this need. That's what it means to bless our community. To help those who have a need. Because there are lots of needs. There are lots of people struggling with lots of things. And maybe it's just being there to listen. Maybe it's giving somebody a hand up, maybe even a hand out. Caring for the need. And, I mean, truth be told, there's a really good chance they're going to be ungrateful. There's a really good chance it's never going to come back to you. But even God is kind to the ungrateful and wicked people. And we have been called to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. When we take off our judgmental glasses, when we stop making ourselves the judge of other people, and when we decide to do what God has told us and treat others how we want to be treated, well, then we begin to see the world differently. We begin to see with compassionate eyes. And then we can go and do likewise. Then we can go and we can help our neighbor. Then we can go and we can bless our community. But it takes seeing the world in a whole new light. It takes the choice on our part to take the steps to develop and to use those compassionate eyes. Lord Jesus, I pray that you would give us compassionate eyes. As you have called us to be like this Samaritan, this most unlikely of hero, this person that nobody would think would do anything good. But God, he had a superpower to see the world differently, to see the needs of others, and to be moved by them. And God, I pray that you make us the same. That we wouldn't turn a blind eye. That we wouldn't be judgmental toward people and their needs, but that we would have compassion. God, that we would go and do likewise. God, help us to develop these compassionate eyes so that we can see the problems around us and not just see them, but to be moved to action. Even though it's going to cost us time, it's going to cost us money, and there's a good chance the people won't be grateful. We're not doing it for them. We're doing it for you. So God, as we go this week, guide us and direct us and help us to be more like you and to follow this command that just like the Samaritan, that we would go and do likewise. We thank you for your love and for your goodness. And continue to help us to be a blessing to this community. In your name we pray. Amen. God bless you guys. We'll see you next week for Easter and Easter breakfast at 9:30 next week.
Yeah. In the silence, standing on this dry ground.